I've never felt like this before. It's like you just get me. I feel like my true self with you. Does that sound crazy? And it doesn't hurt that you're gorgeous. Okay, that's it. I'm taking you home with me. I mean, you can't find shoes this good just anywhere. Find a shoe for every you from brands you love, like Birkenstock, Nike, Adidas, and more at your DSW store or DSW.com.
Thumbtack presents the ins and outs of caring for your home. Out, procrastination, putting it off, kicking the can down the road. In, plans and guides that make it easy to get home projects done. Out, carpet in the bathroom. Like, why? In, knowing what to do, when to do it, and who to hire. Start caring for your home with confidence. Download Thumbtack today.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
All right, Bob. Very excited to announce Mr. Dan Zangrilli is going to be with us every Wednesday at noon.
Big time addition to the program.
Lunchtime with Zangrilli. Here he is, brought to you by Keystone Custom Apparel.
Dining with Dan.
Dining with Dan.
You like that?
Might be pretty good. Do you?
Very nice.
I like that a lot.
Yeah, look at that.
It's 12 o'clock. Why not?
That's why Bob is first on the marquee.
No.
Dining with Dan.
It's your show. I'm just here as a caddy.
It's your show.
I just hope people don't lose their lunch about, well, the content or the meal that we may be serving up.
No.
Like this guy.
It's Pirates on a Platter here with Dan Zangrilli. Let's get started with the hot topic. You like that horse? That would be Noah Hyles tweeting out video of the 97th player to take grounders at first base since the end of last season. Mr. Andrew McCutchen, what do we make of this, Dan?
So it's something that I actually suggested a couple of years ago. Not to, you know, I'm not trying to strain my scapula patting myself on the back here, but I always envisioned this as a possibility. So the designated hitter slot doesn't get monopolized by just one person. And McCutchen, obviously, the last couple of years has done that. I do know they want to get Brian Reynolds off his feet and keep that bat in the lineup more consistently. And let's be honest, what you've seen defensively from O'Neill Cruz in center field leaves a lot to be desired. So if you have, say, a potential fly ball pitcher or where there's a lot of center field action, maybe is Cruz a DH once or twice a week, say when Bailey Falter is on the mound, so you can just try to mitigate some risk of a lot of center field activity while Cruz gets better, hopefully, at that position. McCutchen's bat is an interesting one. He lengthens the lineup. You don't want to completely remove McCutchen from the equation because, listen, he could still turn around 101-mile-an-hour fastball, as he did last night, coming off the bench cold, as he did 96 miles an hour up and in a few days ago and hit the ball 400 feet. Of course, there's no more a professional at-bat in the Pirates lineup given than anyone by McCutchen. So to try to expand and I hate to use the term, provide more flexibility for the manager, this does make a lot of sense. It's something that I kind of targeted a couple of years ago. Now, it remains to be seen if McCutchen can do it.
Play first base. I mean, just to push back, I definitely hear your logic. I just think that that position is deemed by too many as easy to play. It's easier. But a 38-year-old 5'10 guy without a lot of reach, you're just going to throw him in for the first time in his career at first base. We've seen Endy make an error in his first game. We saw Valdez last night. I thought if you didn't have a first baseman who was 5'9 with no reach, that throw by Harrington gets there and you have an out. I just don't like the idea of him playing first base.
Well, and I don't know if he's taken a ground ball outside of Little League on the infield, which is obviously a lot different, and especially if you get somebody left-handed up there. There is, yes, Joe, a lot of nuance. So, I mean, everything that I just described as to what makes it appealing is all on paper. The practicality of it is a completely different animal, and I think it will be a little while before we would even think about putting somebody like that in that situation, because you're not going to try to embarrass one of the greatest players in your franchise's history.
Nor would he want to embarrass himself. I have a feeling that he doesn't want to do field work at all. It seems to be that's been the case. I agree with your logic, too. I think anything you can do, given the state they're in. But to me, the fix would have been signing someone. I know they brought in Horwitz, and hopefully he's an answer there. But I would have still, you know, down the year after year, they're asking the same question. Who's on first?
And listen, what they're going to try to do for other people, whether that's give Reynolds and or Cruz or others more DH days, you're also going to be putting some extra mileage on a guy that they have to be cognizant of his odometer as well, right? McCutcheon's basically playing on one leg. He can't run the bases like he used to on a consistent basis. There's a reason why he can't play the outfield. You know, the inability to throw, really. The elbow was an issue last year. Again, those legs. So you're going to be taxing him if this is going to be more than just a once a week or once every couple of weeks. But I like the idea, the intent of it. I think it's worth running out. Obviously, some skepticism does remain as to the practical application.
Dan Zangrilli joining us here. What are we calling this, Bob?
Dining with Dan.
Dining
it's your noon lunchtime.
Let's whip up an opening for that next week. Yes, limits, but your creative talents to use here.
Knives, forks. What do you think about plates smashing on the floor?
There are a lot of knives out there already. So
I like that.
These appearances are completely disastrous.
Yes.
Right?
Have been in the past. Dan, there's so many things that baffle me. I don't know where to begin, from their best hitter batting ninth to their worst hitter batting first to Tommy Pham at cleanup today to what the hell is going on with the bullpen to Carmen Bujinski suddenly appearing as a starter. Let's start with this. David Bednar. Shelty said before the season, no, he's not our closer. Then he was their closer, and now he's in AAA. What happened to Bednar? What happened to Bednar, and are you optimistic that we'll ever see the all-star version of him again?
Secondary stuff. I think when you watch 96 miles an hour, otherwise well-located fastballs up in the zone above the hands in his first two outings of the year, the walk-off hit in Miami by Storf and then that home run, he eventually did get the save but made a 4-1 game, a 4-3 game. Those were elevated fastballs that are hand high, sometimes above the zone, and that is typically a very safe space to be in, unless hitters know that there is nothing else this guy can throw or can go to. I can then sell out completely on the fastball. That's about the only chance that you have of hitting something hand high or higher as hard as we've seen it in the early going, and that is talking to Alex Stumpf yesterday, had him on the pregame show with me. Looking at the secondary stuff, it's pretty damning. So breaking ball splitter, he has to get that back. That answers the question as to whether or not he's going to return to that closer form. And I would think because they're sending him down to AAA, this is going to be not a complete retool, but it's going to be a fairly lengthy process. Because if it were a quote-unquote quick fix, I think you temporarily remove him from the closer's role, as they did last year, and they try to give him some of those lower leverage opportunities when you're underneath games in the fifth or the sixth inning to try to work through all of this. But the fact that they're sending him to AAA, probably with somebody in their pitching group that thinks that they can identify something, and it's going to take a little while. So I at least don't anticipate this is going to be, Bob, Joe, something that is, you know, 2 weeks and he's back. I would think that it's going to be longer than a month.
I would agree with that, just because of all the stuff he has to work on. So that leads to the question then, who does close? And is it a committee approach? It seems to be that's the way to go. They have so many lefties out there. I don't know if you can put those in those guys, but I guess Holderman is next, or who's the other guy who was really good? Dennis
Santana
last year. I thought he was good at times. What do they do?
So, I mean, he gives up a run. He was the last man up in a game that they were significantly underneath, but he comes to mind. I'm guessing they try Holderman first, But that's also going to have a quick leash because his body work hasn't actually been anything close to stellar. In fact, you can argue that he's been worse than Bednar in some respects. But I would go to Santana, and Ryan Barucki, believe it or not, has actually been lights out. And I would think that those two guys in the back end of the bullpen, if we're talking about the here and the now and the hot hand and just trying to win games and who on this particular date, April 2nd, are your two best relievers, unfortunately, you're looking at Dennis Santana and Ryan Barucki.
Why not Kyle Nicholas?
He doesn't throw enough strikes.
Well, who does? I mean, he has 99-mile-an-hour stuff. And I think I saw last year some really good outings from him as well.
Well, if you're protecting leads and you're going to be given the ninth inning, you got to be able to throw strike one. And you can't be putting, you know, potential tying or go-ahead runs on base by way of free pass. The last thing you want to do is come in and ignite an inning or start a rally yourself. But that was the knock on Nicholas. I would say if he's able to reel in what he's got, you're looking at the new closer of the Pirates.
Yeah, he has to reel it in, but you're right. He has the stuff.
In fact, Bob, I was surprised that he was left off the opening day roster, but my bold prediction to some people that asked about it was that Kyle Nicholas would end 2025 as the Pirates closer. So I'm with you. I'm very high on him, and I think that is eventually where he needs to get to. But as we sit here today, to try to win games and to try to stop a 1-5 start to the year, he's not your best option.
Dining with Dan Zangrilli here for the noon hour on Wednesdays. Fan Twitter brought to you by South Hills Kia Peters Township. Visit them at southhillskia.net. The text line brought to you by Edgar Snyder and Associates, personal injury law firm, where they always say there's never a fee unless we get money for you. And the fan and the Pirates want to visit your teams in action for our youth baseball softball showcase presented by Sheets. Parents, coaches, email us at usports@937thefan.com. To register your 12 and under team, and the fan might make a stop to your field. Details at 937thefan.com. Brought to you by Keystone Custom Apparel. Dan, why is Jack Sawinski still here and coming off the season he did? And why was he batting leadoff last night? He strikes out looking to open the game, goes 0-for-4 with three strikeouts. I'm baffled by the whole Sawinski story.
He looked good in the Miami series. He hasn't looked good the first two games, obviously, of this Tampa Bay series. Why was he hitting leadoff yesterday? It's because coming into yesterday's game, Pirates leadoff hitters were swinging it at an 0-45 clip. I think it's just trying to find something, throw it up against the wall to see what sticks. I don't think they long-term think of Sawinski as a leadoff man, but I would have kind of stuck with Pham there, but they have problems everywhere. Outside of Reynolds, outside of IKF, why do they have him 9? Good question, because he's hitting .341 as a 9 guy over the last year and a half, so you know he's going to flourish there. So rock and hard place, do you move him around, and do you take that production and try to put it elsewhere, and then you don't get that production? It's a finicky kind of thing. He, along with Reynolds, have been basically the only two guys in Cruz showing spurts of any form of competency in that batter's box at this moment. It has been much of the same, obviously, than what we saw all of last year. There's not been that marked improvement. And listen, Nick Gonzalez, how long is he going to be out?
Well, and it's Adam Frazier. He's leading off again today. And,
right.
So I have the thing about these strikeouts. I thought, you know, with Andy Haynes, he was the guy who was going to be the fall guy because of what happened last year. They brought in new guys, and yet the strikeouts still baffle me how many there are. And I know this is a league today, Dan, where it's swing for the fences and strike out, and people tolerate that. But they don't have the swing for the fences power, and they're still striking out. Why not change that approach, or why is it 10 a game like we saw last night?
I have 25 in the first two games of this series.
That's just insane.
And no walks?
Right.
I'm at a loss. It's as bad as it gets offensively, and the reason why I have, or maybe even had, I don't know if I'm going past tense just yet, it's, you know, the starting pitching is in order and they've got the hard part down and trying to build a winner, but the fact that they just haven't been able to somehow, some way scrape together league minimum production is the most frustrating part of all this, because I don't see, and maybe you guys disagree, this bridge that's too far to cross, this massive chasm here between them actually being a competitor because of said starting pitching. It's just tweaking and being competent in the bullpen, and it's being competent in run-scoring situations. They don't need to be great. They don't need to be a juggernaut. They just have to do enough to support what, by all indications, is a top 10 pitching staff. So as far as the strikeouts go, man, it's wild. I never saw 5 or 6 to start the year.
It's incredible. Although it's maybe not to this extent predictable, but when you bring in guys like Adam Frazier and Tommy Pham, what do you expect?
Sure.
Right?
And that's pretty much it. That's why I thought the biggest problem looking back was this offseason, is they didn't seize more opportunities to spend more money.
I don't go that far and think that all of your ills can be cured in the offseason. But I agree with you, right? You've got to be able to do more. Your offseason acquisitions as a small market team, that should be cherry on top, accoutrements, right, to the dinner. You need to have your internal guys and your core players realize their potential. Key Brian Hayes, sure, he had a couple of hits, and so far he's off to an okay start. Joey Bart, okay, is he going to repeat what he did last year? But Sawinski, others, how about Jared Triolo? Was hitless going into yesterday, 1 of 3 for as many opportunities as he's been given and for as highly as they think of him. He's got to add more to this offense. Those are drafted or acquired controllable guys that are to be part of their core. You cannot solve all your ills through free agency. Whether you're a big market team or whether you're a small market team, but especially if you're a small market team, you have to develop your own.
Well, they haven't done that either.
Correct.
That's the problem.
And that's the biggest area of failure.
They all stink, and they're all off to horrible starts except for Connor Falefa and McCutcheon. O'Neill Cruz, underachieving. I won't even get to what he's doing in the field. Joey Bart, OPS less than 600. Brian Reynolds, for the second straight year, I might add, he was bad for the first 2 months last year, hitting .230 with a .550 OPS. Endy, nothing. Frazier, nothing. Sawinski, nothing. Hayes, nothing. Pham, nothing. Almost literally nothing. He's batting .95. And Triolo, the same as last year. And then Valdez, I didn't even know who he was until 10 minutes ago. And then why was Ji-Won Bae on the team? I don't get it. Oh, my God. As I read the names out loud, Dan, what has happened here?
And a lot of these guys are internal guys that have been around long enough, or their time to rise to the occasion is here. And if they don't, well, then you've got problems. And I would tend to agree that they do.
Well, let's talk about something that happened today out west, San Diego. They decided to give the guy who finished second to Paul Skenes in Rookie of the Year voting. He had a tremendous year, and by any other year, he probably would have won it. Jackson Merrill gets a 9-year extension for $135 million. That could get up to $200 million potentially. He's a young kid. They believe in him. He also was willing to go beyond his arbitration years, a lot of them.
I think they got 5 free agency years.
Yeah, and you know, to each his own. He has the choices to make. What would that look like if the Pirates seriously wanted to do something like Skenes? What sort of numbers would you think would be there?
I would think.
And would they do it anyway?
Oh, my gosh.
I mean, I think that this is the exception to the rule. This is where you stretch, though. It's really, really risky to do that with a pitcher for obvious reasons. I think you have you have a palate if it's a position player, like they did to a certain extent with Hayes, but more so with Reynolds. I think for it to even be remotely a possibility with Skenes, I think that number, the baseline minimum, is probably 225, more realistically 250. That's the baseline minimum.
For how many years?
Best case scenario. Ooh.
Because I think he'd want to take it now through arbitration. After yeah. arbitration, that may be a different story.
But he'll have to give back probably at least 2 free agency years, at least. The Pirates, I'm sure, would want 3. But what it does is it at least extends their window as to when they're going to trade him.
Why would he do that? The minute he becomes a free agent, assuming he stays healthy, he has a chance to make $500 million.
He does, and this deal would have to be constructed for him to be able to go out and get another contract. Probably, what is he, 23 right now? You know, you're probably looking at a minimum of 8 years. Ideally, the Pirates would like some sort of team option there to try to get 10. Then he hits free agency, 33 years old. Why would he take the deal? I mean, $200-$225 million guaranteed is significant. It's not going to be 100. It's not going to be 150. So that's, like I said, that's where the barest minimum comes from. Probably 225 with the ability to go out and get another 300.
Yeah.
From what we've seen, though, that won't happen, okay, unless they show us it will happen.
He strikes me as a guy, Bob, who's going to bet on himself.
I'm sure. That's where he sounds. So that to that point, that's where I was really frustrated with this offseason. If you have him here for the limited amount of time you do, knowing that he won't agree to anything beyond that, that's where they need to operate as if they have a first-year rookie quarterback who's an all-pro. You have a young guy making less than $1 million. That gives you freedom financially to do a lot of things.
It does. And I actually believe that the owner is aware of that, and he believes that. And I don't know, maybe I'm getting hoodwinked here, but what really scares me more than anything is if you would make a regime change, and right, I mean, we're probably closer to that than we are not. What happens when a new general manager comes in here or a new philosophy comes in here? What they're looking to do is they're looking to tear it down, take the few assets that they have that the outgoing general manager leaves them and parlay them into something that you
can... Well, hopefully you would bring someone in with the mission of, listen, we've had all these picks. We have allegedly all these prospects. We need someone to take us to the next level here, not tear it down again.
And not many general managers are coming into a new situation where they're having to work with what the previous regime gave them and try to make something, make chicken salad out of whatever has been left behind.
Right.
And here's the other thing. You know, we say Skeens, he's got 5-6 years of control, but really it's almost 4, because if you aren't doing the things that you need to do, and if your organization is not in a healthy place, you, as time goes on, you look at this asset as your biggest chip to be able to flip and move to retool your organization and get them where they need to be.
Gerrit Cole had 2 years left on his deal when they traded him.
Correct. So that 6-year window that we talk about, that's assuming that you take it all the way to free agency and you don't move the guy trying to get something in return. And we know that probably with 2 years left of control, Cole being the example that you just gave there, Joe, that's when you're looking. So it turns from 0 to 6, it turns out to be a 4-year guy at that time. And listen, I don't want to get the cart before the horse here, and I think it's silly to work on all those hypotheticals, but if they don't get this thing turned around here, man, I mean, those are the type of scenarios that you are forcing yourself into. You box yourself into a corner if you don't get this right sooner rather than later.
Dan, we appreciate the time.
Thank
Dining
you.
With Dan, a lot to get into right there. So we look forward to some really good entrees coming up in the next couple of weeks.
We didn't even get into the third base coaches, where Mike Rebelgo has picked up the grand tradition of Goey Schofield and Rick Gofield. Do these guys know to stop people ever at third base? Can Shelty hand them a stop sign? Huh? There's Ron, Bob. Do you hear him?
I hear him.
It sounds like he's from Florida.
Yeah.
Is he related to Billy Cook?
I think that's his long-lost son.
Yeah, grandson.
That's his long-lost son. Rebelgo, Shelton said after he sent Pham an extra innings that it was an inadvertent send. Like he accidentally started windmilling?
Like there was a glitch in the system?
Yeah. What is he, a robot at third? What is happening, Dan, with their base running?
Well, yeah.
I know they've stolen some bases. That's wonderful. But they don't move runners along. Guys that get on base don't seem to score. And then these base running gaffes, sending guys home who have no chance to score. It's mind boggling.
I think it's in unnecessarily selling out to metrics and data and risk and not allowing the moment and true baseball common sense to take hold of the moment.
Yeah. Well, thank you, sir.
Thank you.
Thanks, Dan. Look forward to the pregame show coming up.
Giddy up.
What time does it start today?
It's on KDKAM right now.
Right now?
Yes.
Good luck.
Thank you.
What a nice man he is, huh, Bob?
Dining with Dan, Wednesdays at noon.
That's a great name you came up with. And I commend you for that.
Say yes to Pure Leaf tea and free gas for a year only at True North Convenience Stores. When it comes to quality, say yes to the delicious taste of real brewed Pure Leaf tea. True North stores are stocked with your favorite flavors like unsweetened, extra sweet, and raspberry. For a limited time, enter for a chance to win free gas for a year. Check the True Rewards app for details or download the mobile app from the Apple or Google Play stores. True North Convenience Stores. Fast, friendly, clean.
College holds a mythic place in American culture, but there are stories you won't hear on the campus tours.
The higher-ups are concerned about one thing, and that is avoiding scandal.
I'm Margot Gray. On the new podcast, Campus Files, we cover everything from rigged admissions to the drama of Greek life and student protests. Listen to and follow Campus Files, an Odyssey original podcast, available now on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
Bob, we have some very exciting news. Mark Cabali is going to join us. He's coming back from the airport from the owners' meetings where he either fell asleep or had something horrible happen to him or was doing it intentionally to drum up business for the McAfee show. I don't know which, or it just happened. What's your gut feel, Bob? Just so people know, there was video and photos of Cabali who got prime seating next to Tomlin at Tomlin's media address at the owners' meetings in Florida, and then proceeded to, well, do one of those things. It looked like he was sleeping for sure. I don't know. I'm leaning toward this was trying to drum up more, maybe more publicity for McAfee. How do you feel, Bob?
I mean, that is certainly a consideration, but I think more likely he had to fly down there late. He had to get up early. As I said, these things are very early. And if you don't get there early enough, you get kind of boxed out. So my guess is he got there early, ate some breakfast, sat down at the seat well ahead of Mike Tomlin, and then he was very kind of in and out of consciousness waiting for that to happen. And it carried over to when he was talking. So I don't think that he staged this in any way. I think it was just a function of being too early in the morning, and he strikes me as a late night guy.
Limits. You failed to add Noah Hyles' follow-up quote on the McCutcheon is on the field taking grounders at first base. He added, I'm like 90% sure he's just messing around, but it's still an interesting visual.
What?
Yes. He added that.
Is it April 1st still?
Did he write it he wrote it underneath his tweet a little bit after that.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. He added that. So still, I guess, a 10% chance, Bob, and we spent the whole segment taking that seriously. I'm not blaming you, Limits, but we should add this context.
I never took it seriously to begin with because I don't think he is equipped, you know, physically right now to play any position, which is why he's not played a position. So I think, I don't know what the reason was, but it, you know, certainly when it first came out, because they don't have a first base. And for example, if they had a stud at first base and he's over there taking grounders, you wouldn't probably write much into it.
Again, they have a 5'9 guy who nobody knew of until 5 minutes ago playing first base. So why wouldn't McCutcheon take? You know what I mean? You're right. It's the context of it. Anybody over there taking grounders wouldn't surprise us. And who knows? There's still a 10% chance it's serious, right?
Yeah, it could be, but I doubt it. In fact, I would bet that that's not going to happen. I think it was just what it was.
Me too. How else are you, Bob? You doing well today so far?
Yeah, we're doing, you know, hopefully today will be a good day for Skeens and the offense. He has to have the offense. You can't win if you don't score. So.
Yeah, are you optimistic with that lineup? Give me the lineup again if you have it in front of you.
I think it was, I don't have it in front of me, it was Frazier leading off.
Yeah.
Followed by Reynolds, then Cruz, Tommy Pham, your leadoff hitter. And then I forget the rest of it, but it was
Triolo. Adam Frazier. Brian Reynolds, Cruz, Tommy Pham as your cleanup hitter, batting .095. Sawinski, Key Brian Hayes, Endy Rodriguez, Jared Triolo, and Kiner Falefa. And I meant to ask Dan this because I agree with you. Paul Skeens should be hitting.
Yeah, I'm not.
I'm not joking either.
I think if he, and he has a good track record of being. Now, they'll tell you that his sole mission is to pitch and all aspects of his attention go there. That's fine. Except in this day and age, we've seen people like Travis Hunter come around, you know, people playing two different positions. You know,
Ohtani.
And I'm not suggesting that's the case here. But what I am suggesting is in this time of need, you know, I'm sure they won't take that chance, but
if you gave Paul Skenes an offseason to ramp up as a hitter, I think he'd be the fourth or fifth best hitter in this lineup. That's what I think. And I'll go back to some quotes that the Air Force coach gave me about Skenes. You know, he would have been a first-round pick as a catcher.
Well, I know.
And hitter.
He's really good. That's what I'm saying. It's not just any hitter we're talking about. We're talking about Skenes as a hitter, especially what you saw in his career at college. So, but that's only out of desperation do we mention these things, because they get no hitting from anywhere. And normally you wouldn't even consider that with him.
I mean, I was thinking about it the day they drafted him, to be honest with you. Mark Kozlowski's the Air Force coach, Bob, who coached Skenes. Mm-hmm. And Jay Johnson was his coach at LSU, where Skenes won a national championship. Both of those guys, particularly Johnson, have coached major league draft picks who are hitters. And I asked both of those guys 1 year ago, could Skenes be Pittsburgh's version of Ohtani? And here's what Johnson said. You ready?
Go ahead.
He's coached 61 major league draft picks in his career. He said, I would never bet against him for anything. He's got the talent and competitive nature to do it. I will say this. He said, I think, you know, pitching is obviously where you want him. But Jay Johnson, the LSU coach, added, I will say this. If you were in the old National League rules, you definitely have the best hitting pitcher in all of baseball, and he would not be batting ninth in any order if he was hitting. I'll tell you that. And he wasn't joking. I half jokingly suggested to him that Skenes would be batting cleanup for the Pirates. And the other guy, Kozlowski from the airport, says, he says, believe me, he could do it. He could hit, meaning he could hit
in Major League
Baseball.
And if Joe Maddon were the manager, he'd be batting cleanup. You know, they would move him in position where he can actually make a difference.
Johnson also said this when Skenes was at LSU. He said, we decided to go with all pitching, and we could not have won without him pitching. But I stand by this, his coach at LSU said. If he was just a hitter for us in his last year here, he would have hit 25 to 30 home runs and been a first-team All-American position player, Bob.
Yeah.
Give him a month or two to ramp up and let him hit. And I promise you that this guy would be better than some of the hitters in this lineup.
I'm not going to rule that out. It's not crazy, but they're not going to do it. That's simply the way that goes. But given these difficult times they're having offensively, I mean, you got to be creative about some of this stuff, too.